What's up, everyone? Welcome into another episode of The Hours. I'm Mark, joined by Tyler. Together, we're Savvy Coaching, and we're going to hop in here. I have a small question for Tyler. What is something in your life, could be personal, could be basketball, anything, that you don't understand its value until you don't have it? Something you might take for granted on like a daily basis.
I mean, first off, are there any small questions? And secondly, I don't think this is a small question. And thirdly, it's going to be the daily presence of my wife. Yeah, I think so. For those of you that don't know, my wife has been going through some health stuff. And so we haven't had her in the home for the last 2 weeks. And I'm like, yeah, value my wife. Yeah, I really value our teamwork. Yeah, I really value our partnership. I mean, yeah, it's so valuable what she does, you know, schooling our children and, you know, making sure we're all fed and keeping the home, and she doesn't work outside the home. But I didn't understand how valuable it was until I tried to do it for 2 weeks along with the other things. And it is, I value it so much more. So the additional piece, and like, I think through her, I'm valuing this, is just health. Like, I think that's another thing, is like, we don't really think about being healthy from a place of massive gratitude until we're not healthy. You're like, oh my gosh, health is so valuable. And, you know, a lot of times we try to work on getting healthy after we're unhealthy, whereas most of the work to stay healthy comes from, when you are healthy, eating well, working out, getting enough rest, you know, eliminating stress from your life. So that was a, in no small part, it's a small question, but that was my answer. How about you? What's something that that you value more once it's gone?
Mine is much less profound, but I have found my AirPods, man. I can't find my AirPods, and I can't listen to my podcast. I don't enjoy my walks anymore throughout the day as much. And yeah, I'm dying here. I need my AirPods back for my productivity. But what you shared actually has some good teaching, is like, eliminate losing, you know? So like, how do we eliminate being sick? Like, taking care of our bodies when we're well. And coaches oftentimes like, just like, okay, we have this problem, how do we solve it? I think the great coaches eliminate problems before they start. They have the foresight to look ahead and say, okay, like, this can become an issue. What can we do today so it never becomes an issue? But yeah, so mine was much less profound, but I'm missing my AirPods.
I like that. So I lost my AirPods, or rather they broke. I wanted to do more research. In the airport, I picked up, when old school, a pair of wired headphones plugged into the bottom of my phone. I have had them now for like 2 months, and I don't know. I feel like there's less, you know, radio waves causing cancer in my brain. I know there's people, So I'm on the wired headphone life right now with my phone, because I'm still doing research on the best noise canceling headphones that also have a really good microphone. The Jabra something or other is winning right now, but I want to test them. Anyway, just, you know, another aside, technology.
Well, let me know, because if I can't find mine, then I'll be in the market.
Yeah, I mean, I can send you my wired ones overnight mail, overnight express. That'll be a win. All right, let's jump into our big question. And the reason I selected this as the big question for you today is, it's probably one of the most common next questions I'm getting from all of the hundreds of coaches that are a part of our membership. So for those of you who don't know, we have a few hundred coaches that we work with in an ongoing basis as part of our exclusive paid Savvy community. And besides meeting with us live once a week, going through all of our courses, asking us questions in our exclusive community, they get to send us in film breakdowns. And so a 2 to 3 minute segment of something that they've identified that they need to get better at, or they want feedback on. So Mark and I provide this feedback, and it's really fun because we now get to really understand the players, the personnel, the styles. You know, we know what they've been working on from week to week. Whenever I give feedback, don't worry, I'm leading up to the big question here. Whenever I give feedback on, I think a recent one that I posted in our exclusive community was, you know, get stronger on the wall, build your wall bigger, get better on the wall. So the follow-up question I got was, okay, how do I plan my practice to get better at that thing? And that's often the follow-up question. It's the right follow-up question. Okay, that's what we need to get better at. And therefore, what should I do differently in my practice tomorrow, this week? That's the right question. So Mark, take us through nitty gritty, your process, so that we could all maybe imitate your process to plan practice better. Like what are your steps, and then how do you actually plan your practice accordingly?
Yeah. I mean, planning practice is, it should be simple of what do we need to work on? So in this case, if you're telling me that we need to work on being at the wall more consistently, then I think planning practice becomes a lot easier because we know exactly what we're working on. I think oftentimes when we're overwhelmed and we don't know what we're working on, that's when it becomes difficult. You get that writer's block.
Let me real quick, because we have a lot of listeners that probably might not know our savvy terminology. Again, savvy means to have a deep understanding and a deep knowledge of a thing. A savvy coach is mastering the craft of coaching. That's why we call it savvy. And so wall is what we call help defense and help positioning. But one specific aspect of help, the low man or the lowest defender, the defender that's closest to the baseline, that is the wall defender. Primarily, they're trying to occupy the smile or the restricted area to make sure that we take away the thing that we want the most on offense. The thing that we want the most on offense is nines, big advantage layups at the rim. And so we don't want to give up those things on defense. Basketball is a game of opposites. So by ensuring that we have a wall at all times, and that wall is strong and that wall is big and that wall is trained effectively in technique, we're taking away the thing that is most valuable to the opposing team. Build the wall. Now, how you get someone on the wall, there's lots of ways to do it. And we offer some of the ways that we think are best. But that's what we mean by building the wall. Build it higher, build it stronger, build it thicker, build that hedge of protection around the rim. Okay, so that's the language that Mark is going to say, okay, if we plan practice this way, how do we do it?
I think where I really grew as a practice coach is getting these objectives to bleed throughout the entire practice and not just, hey, let's do a drill. Let's do a wall drill for 5 minutes and then just go about the next, 90 minutes to 2 hours of the practice and just be able to check the box at like, hey, we worked on that. We want as much transfer as possible to decrease the performance gap. There's always going to be a gap between what your players know and what they actually do in the game. Why we practice and train is to shrink that gap as short as possible. The shorter that gap, the more we can shrink it, then our execution goes way up. So I always break down activities into three categories: teach, train, or compete. It's like, what do we need to go back and reteach? Is it where the wall is, like where, what is our position? Is it, what do we do once we're at the wall? Maybe we're fouling too much on the wall, right? So maybe we need to like reteach or retrain how to wall up, how to put our, like I like to give external cues. So I would just like palms, show the ref your hands, or palms to the ceiling, or thumbs in your ears, whatever sticky language you like. What do we need to reteach? And then how do we train that? And this is actually really glad you asked this big question, because this comes up a lot too in our film feedback that I give. Coaches will say, well, how do I work on that? And I find the gap in a lot of application is the training games. So we'll go from like a drill that's more block to full out live 5-on-5 or even a small sided game and just hope that it transfers. I think meat on the bone is in your training game. So then I'm thinking, okay, what games could we play that involves a wall defender? And I might just do a change of finishing game to where players have to be the wall and they're working on walling up while we're working on finishing or playing off 2 feet against a help defender. Like one that comes to mind that I've seen you run is like an 8 station, so we can work on our wall defense that way, where we're shaping the environment like in a very specific way, where defense, you're going to be here. Offense, you're going to be here. But once we go, it's somewhat live there, right? Whether defense is guided or live, it's not a full out game where we're just checking it up and playing, but we're training a specific aspect on both sides of the ball. And then we want to take that in the competition, where I would just shape the game with some constraints or conditions. One that I love would be cutthroat. And all that is you just add a violation to the defense. In this case, it would be, if we don't get to the wall, I'm going to blow the whistle. Your team rotates off. Y'all don't get a chance to score a point because you didn't get to the wall. So a lot of other games you could say, one that we shared recently and a lot of coaches have reached out and said they've had a lot of success with it, is playing until we. So start practice. Let's just jump right into 5-on-5. And how do we make this an emphasis right away and frame practice direct focus to what we want is, hey, we're going to play 5-on-5 full court until we don't have a wall defender. And then we're going to blow the whistle and rotate off. So that'd be a way where like getting to the wall would bleed all throughout our practice, where if I knew that we're going to walk away from practice, it could have been, you know, good, bad, somewhere in the middle of practice, but I at least know that we move the needle in one aspect. And then in this case, it would be building a wall.
Beautiful. Mark threw out another term, and many of you are probably newer to Savvy, is we have, it's cool to see the podcast grow, but you know, 1,000 listeners every time, many of you don't know what an 8-station is. So I would invite you, the link is in the description below. If you're watching on YouTube, you can just go to savvyfree.com and that would get you into our free community. And there's free resources in there that actually explain to you the Savvy Shot Scale, which just having that PDF in our free resources will change the way that you clearly communicate about shot selection. And it's really just beautiful. I was with our 4th and 5th graders last night, my daughter's team, and I was asking them what they learned, and they were just like speaking the language as 4th and 5th graders so beautifully. It's like, oh, you know, we weren't hunting 9s, you know, and oh yeah, you know, we shot 2 early 7s, and like, they know it. They can't quite do it yet. They need more training, but they know it. And it's really cool. So head to savvyfree.com, join our free community, go into the free resources. There is that and more in there. We would love to get you in there for us and for yourselves as well. Okay. Mark, what percentage of teams would benefit from getting stronger at the wall defensively this week? 100%, right? Now, there might be some teams that would benefit more from other things. We don't know. But especially as we're working with our teams, like this has been the feedback for a reason. Most teams are not strong enough at the wall. So here's a 5-step process to evaluate what you might teach within the framework that Mark already gave you as far as getting stronger at the wall. And this isn't the only way to approach it, but this is the way that I would approach it. This would be my lens and my checklist to say, okay, step one to get stronger at the wall. Are we always there? That's step one. Are we there? Are we there in transition? Are we there in the half court? Do we always have someone as the low man or the low person being strong on the wall? Are we there? Second, are we talking there? So one's just going to be our physical presence. Second, are we talking? Are we communicating there? Are we communicating to the ball? Are we talking to the defender on the ball to let them know that they have a wall? A really high level coach sent me film, like 8 D1 players on the floor here. I mean, this high school looks like a college. It's unbelievable. Shout out Billy Armstrong, one of our Savvy coaches. And he's like, hey, you know, we need to improve our ball pressure and really sniping or denying passes to the free side. And yes, they did. But why his players didn't feel comfortable getting more aggressive on the ball or more aggressive hunting that pass is because they didn't trust their wall. They didn't, and you can't see behind you. But when you hear the wall saying, I got you, it frees you up. You know, you got Rudy Gobert back there saying, I got you. I won't even try a French accent right now. You can get a little bit more aggressive. So are they talking on the wall? Third, do they stay there? So most teams, nearly all teams, have someone that's at least more skilled at the wall than the other players on your team. And so the best teams find ways to keep them there. Keep them there by switching off ball actions. Keep them there by scramming out, you know, on the backside. Keep them there on ball screen coverages. They find a way to keep their best player on the wall. So how can you get them to stay there would be step three. Okay, number four. So all those things are just like be there and be talkative there and be there more and longer and get your best players there more. Step four, improve skill there. So there's a skill to being there. There's a skill to skyscraping. There's a skill to actually walling up. There's a skill to putting your chest on the ball. There's a skill to skirmishing on penetration to also kind of guard that dump off. There's a lot of skills there, but let's improve skill there would be step four. Step five, don't foul there. So the skill will help the no foul, but even once you do that, a lot of players have the habit of bailing people out. So don't foul there. So here's the five, get there, talk there, stay there longer, improve skill there, and then don't foul there. And that would be the things that I would teach within the framework that Mark already shared, as you're trying to check down what to teach. Don't teach all five at once.
So what I love is that you developed a checklist for the wall. And I think checklists are so valuable because now as a coach, and I would encourage you, if you're listening, go and watch film of your team and see where you're lacking. Because I think, like we said, 100% of teams can be better on the wall, just like you can always be better at rebounding. You can always be better at guarding without fouling, always be better at shot selection. We can always be better on the wall. So look at the checklist and just see, okay, like we're there, we're talking, our best player stays there, you know what? But we don't wall up well. We foul too much there. So then it's like, you've got 1, 2, and 3. Now we need to work on 4 and 5. And then you design your games, your drills, your activities in practice to tackle those specific things. So we're tackling the right problem. I think, again, great coaches find the root cause of why their team isn't where it needs to be. So I'll say this, here's a blind spot that I have found a lot when doing defensive breakdowns, whether it's lock left or any other system, is a common blind spot is just jumping to the ball. And it sounds so simple, but I feel like a lot of coaches gloss over that. And to me, maybe my lens has been shaped because we were very principle based on defense as well, to where like how we covered things, how we defended certain actions, even when we didn't switch. And even when we did switch, it doesn't matter. If you're in position, you can guard anything. So if you're getting over a flex cut, if you're getting through a stagger, if you're switching a double down, if you're switching, you know, shuffle action, whatever it is, if you don't jump to the ball, you're already behind. So be in position, be quote unquote there, as Tyler said, and then talking, teach them what to say. So Tyler, what do you want your wall defender saying? What would you teach?
The first thing I'd basically just say is, what are you doing? So if they're on the wall, say, I'm on the wall. I mean, just say what you're doing. That'd be step number one. Step number two, say what one other person should be doing. So I would have them talk to the ball handler. It'd be like a level two. This is a little bit harder, which would basically bring it to me. Like bring the ball to me, send them to me. Right. And then step three would be like, tell the whole team what they should be doing. Right. So okay, get it to jail. Or if we're guarding an action, right? Ice. Right. Or if, you know, there's an off ball split action, right? Switch. So those would be the three steps I would have them communicate. But I really think the person on the wall needs to be your loudest and most vocal communicator. I mean, they're the furthest back, they see the most on the floor. And that's a part of being a great wall defender.
Yeah, they're like the catcher in baseball or softball. They see everything. All right, so we know what to say, and then keep the best there. Principle I would share is good switching should keep bigs in and littles out. So we're playing to our roles. We keep our wolf out. We keep our wall in, and then improve skill there. You already went over that very well. And then don't foul. I would just share this. Instead of saying don't foul, eliminate fouling, right? Like what would eliminate fouling? It's hand positioning, being there. Like if you have to go help, like how do we help? Being able to play with verticality, all that stuff. So I love that you shared a checklist there. Really good.
Hey everybody, this is Tyler, and I'd like to personally invite you to join our free Savvy Coaching community. Post any question you have here in our chat and get your questions answered, as well as get access to all of our free resources in our Savvy community. We've got it all here for you. So click the link below and we'll see you inside.
All right, Tyler, let's go to the mailbag. I've got a question for you on role rebounding. You ready for it?
Yeah.
All right. So this coach is a first year Savvy coach. He's done a deep dive into lock left and a combination of race and space and drive and space, which we highly recommend. But they gave up 17 offensive rebounds. So he is questioning, should he start implementing role rebound? Up until this point, he has not introduced role rebounding.
Yes. and I think like introducing role rebounding is going to get you a similar outcome to introducing roles in transition, which players are going to have one job and zero excuses, and higher accountability in any aspect of life helps you improve that thing. So there's no magic to role rebounding. There is magic to accountability. And so role rebounding just provides some level of accountability. Every team will rebound better if players move faster, move sooner, and move with more purpose. And that's all role rebounding is. That's the greatest impact of role rebounding. Roll rebounding basically just gives a very simple roll. And here's where I'd start. There's levels to all this stuff. And I think more and more on this like public facing podcast, we just want to give people the first step. And usually if the first step, and I'm talking to all of the audience here, if the first step moves you in a direction that you like, well, then I hope you come back and check us out for the second, third, fourth, and fifth step. Because that's really where you separate. So there's always another step. And once we hit the fifth step, that's not the end of the line either. And so here's the first step: chase or erase. And I'm talking defensively here. We're talking defensive rebounding. Give everyone a role to either chase or erase, and give them a role that is suited to their natural skill set. Some players naturally are better at erasing. It's called boxing out traditionally. I don't like the term boxing out because it associates it with a single technique and not an outcome, right? Boxing out is we need to put our butt on them, right? We need to back them up, where there's so many other ways that you can erase or eliminate a single player from contesting the rebound. So erasers just find the most dangerous offensive rebounder and eliminate them from the math problem. The math problem of rebounding is which team gets more players around the ball. That's the math problem, right? And the team that has the greater sum of players around the ball will get more rebounds. And so identify who on your team is a natural eraser and say, that's your job. When a shot goes up, you erase the most dangerous, nearest to the rim player. Chasers, who has a nose for the ball, who rebounds outside their area? Who's like that player? Because a lot of times it just comes down to grabbing the ball, right? Like, which player is going to grab the ball more aggressively, more forcefully? Who's going to win that grab? Who's got great timing on their rebounds? Like, who gets to the ball quicker? Your tallest players are not always, and I would even say not often, your best chasers. Your tallest players tend to be your best erasers, tend to be. And so the chasers are the ones that don't ever try to erase someone. They just go and help us win the math problem. And so who's a chaser and who's an eraser? And it wouldn't change based on their other roles. It wouldn't change based on who else is on the floor. That's just step one of role rebounding. I'm not going to get into step 2 through 5 at all right now. Mark, anything you would add to that?
No, that was really good. I do have one more mailbag question for you. I'm interested to get your take on this one. It is about second half starts. This coach is a member of our paid community and said his team's come out flat in the second half over the last couple of years. I'll share 4 ideas that I shared with him, but interested to get your take on this. Number one, if your team is struggling coming out in the third quarter, it's a common problem. Let's practice it. So let's practice a halftime, middle of practice, maybe in between second and third quarter of practice. Let's take an extended break, even go through our halftime warm-up. And if you're like, ooh, halftime warm-up, that'd be a waste of time in practice, then reevaluate our warm-up at halftime to something that's more valuable. And then simplify the halftime meeting process. Maybe we're sharing too much. So focus on one thing coming out of half. Let's direct their focus towards one thing. And maybe that is more behavioral than tactical. If we're coming out flat, then let's emphasize stance or being on the wall, right? Just one thing that we're really going to measure out of halftime. And then last, already kind of said, is just make your halftime warm up more intentional. I think there are several ways to do that. And I know we even did a deep dive into that in one of our cohorts. So any ideas outside of those 4, Tyler? No. All right, man. You know, I thought we could trust or rely on you for like something outside the box, like crazy, like.
Well, for the sake of time, that's step 5. That's step 5.
That is step 5.
Some cold plunging and Wim Hof breathing are step 5. Okay.
That's true. Maybe some visualization, something like that.
Absolutely. I mean, all of those things I think are more valuable than tactical adjustments.
Cool. All right, let's go. Let's go game of the week.
Oh yeah, porch slides. Let's go, baby. We have found that our players on the porch need a little bit more help in learning how to find space and get open from the porch. We would start, and we would actually have 2 lines. We have a line at the top of the key. We'd have a line on the porch. And I like to put a coach or an injured player in the smile right here. The ball will start with the self-toss. 2 can attack with a go step. On the first one, we're just going to work on attacks away. So we're going to attack away. We're going to go a lane line attack. Coach is going to decide, are they chesting the drive or are they going to show hand or shoulder on the drive? If chest it's an opportunity for us to rep our stride stops. As soon as the defender commits to the ball, it unlocks our porch, and they're going to work on actually sliding up the lane to make sure that they get out of tic-tac-toe. Tic-tac-toe would be three in a row. To get out of tic-tac-toe, to make sure that they get a hand in a passing lane, and they get their anchor drag foot, the pivot foot closest to the rim, so that then we can make this pass. And the only rule on our porch slides is no bounce passes on slide ups. That's just too easy of a pass. We want the offense to learn to be creative with their passes, make fakes, create space, whatever, and no dribbles, right? So the ball can't hit the ground on porch slides. No bounce passes and no dribbles on this catch. They have to use their pivot to get to the rim. As the coach is covering, they get their finish. They switch spots, whatever, okay? And so they're just going over and over and over again, working on their slide ups. Once we play that game to five, because it's a game, then we're going to do dribble at porch slides. So now we're going to actually attack lane line on the side of the porch. And now the porch is going to slide under the basket and then find that same thing. We're still making a read on the coach, chest or shoulder. If it's shoulder, they're finishing. If they get chested, they've got to find that same space. No bounce pass, no dribble, rip on a contest. And everyone is playing to five. And it's just a quick way to embed a little bit of success early on. That is a game that we call porch slides. Anything to add to that one, Mark?
Yeah, if I was playing in this practice with an objective to be wall defenders or get better on the wall, I would replace the coach with a player and maybe put them at some kind of disadvantage where they really have to rotate over to get their chest in front, create a scenario where they might be there on time or they might be late, which would create the read for the perimeter player. Or you could just have your wall defender be a guided defender. You know, here's what you could be where number one is in this situation if you're watching on the YouTube, and just hold up a one for skirmish and a two for, you know, show chest help, and give player five here that Tyler just put in the cue of I want you to skirmish or stunt, or I want you to fully commit to help would be two. That way you're having them as a guided defender where they just get used to doing both. They're getting defensive reps. We're two-way teaching. But I would highly recommend for a lot of teams that are four out, one in, because a lot of the film breakdowns I've done, I've found the porch player gets really creepy and kind of hangs around the mid post, even finds himself gravitating up to the high post instead of staying disciplined in the porch spot, stretching the defense vertically and horizontally.
Teach better. About 5 years ago, we had a world-renowned learning expert come in and train us on how to be better teachers. And this individual has written books, has done TED Talks, and he has a center for teaching autistic children up in Toronto, Ontario, Canada. His name's Jonathan. And Jonathan taught me a lot about teaching as I got to follow up with him for years after the workshop, the two-day workshop that we did. But what the number one takeaway from his workshop, I'm going to share with you now. He's a world-class teacher. He taught us how to teach better. And I'm going to share with you the number one takeaway right now, because we all are, as coaches, teachers first. His number one teaching around teaching was not to teach, but rather to learn. So he said, before you try to teach anything like a skill, how to wall up, how to slide from the porch, don't even touch the content you're trying to teach until you've taught them how to learn. Teach studentship first. This is one of my favorite, you know, observations when I was training basketball coaches hands-on to run camps, was I would say, okay, you need this group to get better at playing off 2 feet, go. And 100% of these basketball trainers and coaches would go and start teaching the skill of playing off 2 feet or why to play off 2 feet. 0% of them would teach the group how to learn first. The world-class TED Talk teacher, Jonathan, would always teach studentship first, and studentship is the ability to learn. Here's where I want you to direct your eyes. Here's what I want you to feel in the learning process. Here's how I want you to approach mistakes. Here's how I want you to give partner feedback. Like, before you taught any aspect of the skill, would teach studentship first. And I was thinking about this because I think as I've gotten to observe and do practice audits, as I've gotten to observe coaches, they just dive right into the skill and the outcome, and they don't teach studentship first. and this is probably a whole podcast episode. It's probably something that we'll build out into our classroom. Very here in our roadmap that is going to be coming up is how to teach basketball studentship, because a team of players that knows how to learn well is going to improve a lot faster throughout the season than a team of players that doesn't know how to learn well and just tries to get better at the skill. Mark, what is one aspect of studentship that you have valued in the teams that you've coached and that you believe that you've taught players to embrace?
I think just general problem solving, like getting them to think on the floor. I'm actually doing a practice audit right now, and my feedback for this coach is like everything is very directed. It's more drill based, where like you're going to be here, this is what's going to happen. And I think just putting players in live situations, even have them figure out rotations, then you just start to put them in a place that like, all right, in practice, we're all figuring this out. So I've got to learn how to learn. I've got to always be on. It's not just going to be spoon fed to me. So I think that's like the easiest application and one that got more and more natural for me.
I love it. Two final reminders. One, if you are not on our newsletter, head to savvycoach.com. Click the link below if you're watching on YouTube. You get insights weekly. I'm really pumped up about the email going out about shooting today. It's really valuable. And Marcus told me his dad found it valuable. So you might even want to share the newsletter with somebody. Two, if you're not a part of our free community, go to savvyfree.com. Come and join us. Ton of free resources. Great conversations happening in there. Coaches are getting better. And we're on the school platform. So we would love to have you go a little bit deeper with us.
Number three, once you get savvy, just stay savvy.
Stay savvy.
That's right. All right, y'all. We'll see y'all next week.